Hello and welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. I'm joined by Matt today.
Morning all. Well, assuming you're listening in the morning.
Well, yeah. Well, we're recording in the morning.
Yeah.
But we're not going to talk movies today. Well, we could talk about movies, I suppose, but we're not going to.
No.
We're going to talk about SmogCon, which happened just the other day.
The premier Malifaux event thus far this year.
Premier? Biggest?
Well, certainly biggest, yeah.
Because it was a three-dayer.
Yes.
Which actually, I think, makes it the biggest Malifaux event ever in the UK.
Yeah, I think so. We've had a couple of double dayers, but over three. But then it is all about you.
It is all about me. Well known. Though apparently it's not all about me.
No.
Because some people went and played in the smog pit.
Yeah, but we don't talk about those people from Kent. They are excommunicated.
Well, no, only Ben is.
Yeah.
So, SmogCon. Just finished. And from a TO point of view, went incredibly well.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of had a foot in both camps because I played a little bit and then sort of joeyed around for you a little bit. But with a foot in either camp, I don't think it could have really gone any smoother. There were no hiccups whatsoever. Certainly none that immediately spring to mind.
Yeah, I think it worked well. We got all set up nicely on Thursday.
Yep.
Afternoon. So we all made it down early. We were there for about 4 o'clock.
Yeah, I think we were there for four because we were setting up by five. We were fully in a sort of setup mode, and we'd been joined by Joel, who had also come down on the Thursday.
Yep. Usual snafus with a venue that you've not been to. They'd put some tables out. Nowhere near enough tables have been put out.
No.
So we got them to get some more tables, and we started to set up the Malifaux boards. And then the War Machine guys arrived, and they hadn't got any tables. So we had to go and find tables for them and then work out how to put them up because the tables weren't wide enough. Mm-hmm. And it was all a bit of a kerfuffle.
But that was the only really stressful kind
that was
of
the
hour.
Only thing. And that's just a thing with dealing with a venue that's not dealt with
people like us. Those
specific requirements before.
Yeah.
And, I mean, to be fair, the way SmogCon was set up was over two hotels, and there was sort of the main hotel was the Mandalay,
mm-hmm.
and then there was an Overspill hotel.
Yeah,
really.
I guess Overspill is probably the most accurate word for us.
And Malifaux was in there, which was brilliant because we had a massive room.
Yes,
it was a ballroom basically.
Mm.
Absolutely massive, huge high ceilings, but really good acoustics.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing from sort of going to events, bearing in mind other events where we've just had kind of 24 or 30 Malifaux players in a room, and the ambient noise level almost is deafening. It makes it really hard to hear. We had 32-ish Malifaux players, and then on the other half of the room, kind of the same, if not more, War Machine players. We had none of those issues of that kind of not being able to hear your opponent because of the
it's the advantage of being in a purpose-designed meeting room presentation space.
Yeah,
is that they have the acoustics sorted out. It had big screens that we could put the drawers up on, and interestingly,
the rugby. The curling was only up for a little while, and then we kind of lost interest in that. We thought, oh, silver's a wonderful color anyway.
It's much better than gold, really. But we were able to put the rugby on, which did elicit my most sweary outburst of the whole weekend when we scored.
Mm-hmm.
And I jumped out of my seat yelling away, and the whole of the Malifaux crowd just seemed to stop and turn around and look at me as what I'm yelling about.
Yeah, there's an irony there about a true rugby fan, because you jumped up and yelled. They all stopped and turned to look at you. I stopped and looked at the screen to see what it was that you were shouting about.
So that was good. So anyway, so we got set up.
Yeah.
a load of us went out for a curry on Thursday night.
Yep.
And then a few beers may have been consumed.
Yeah, in hindsight, I'm thinking that sort of 3 o'clock in the morning finishing time for that may not have been the wisest choice.
So, yes, so a late night on Thursday, but I knew I was only going to be drinking one night.
Mm.
And I thought, I'll get it out of the way and be done.
Yeah.
And I did get it out of the way quite successfully.
Yeah, that was definitely a successful only drinking sort of one night kind of shenanigans, because you maximised the time and probably got two nights worth of drinking into the one.
I think so. So, so that was good. And so then we rocked up. Not that early, to be fair.
No.
9 till 10 was registration on Friday morning for the story encounter.
Yeah.
And the players didn't... One of the interesting things that I'd done with the story encounter, it was based on Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Da, 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 da.
And I hadn't told the players what was going to happen. They'd seen the first scenario and that was it.
Mm.
And so we had three scenarios during the day, and whether you won the previous scenario meant that you were doing different things and different victory point conditions for the other games.
Yeah.
So did you play in that one?
I played just in the first encounter because I was covering a space for Mike Hutchinson, who he had already said he was going to not be able to get there till lunchtime. So I filled that slot for the first one so he could take over once he arrived and play the second two scenarios.
Yeah. So the first one was basically looking for the Ark,
mm-hmm.
and was almost, it was a cross between Squatter's Rights and Treasure Hunt from 1.5, really.
Yes, it worked very well because there was much giggling and jostling for position to try and flip one of those five markers over. With the scenario rule that you interact with the scenario marker, which means you flip it over and then you flip a card, and if you get a severe, you found the Ark. And we, in the game I played, and I think that was against Dom, we were down to kind of the last two of the five counters before we actually found the Ark.
Cool. And then if you got the Ark, then you moved on to the second scenario. And the second scenario is based on the scene in the movie where the Nazis are carrying the Ark to the altar and Indy turns up having hitched a ride on a submarine for 400 miles with a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
And so there was one crew that had the Ark and one crew that was attacking. But what I threw into the mix was blind deployment, which no one seemed to have played before.
No, I mean, I was totally unaware of what the blind deployment rules were, and you put them up on the big screen, which I think was really helpful to everyone. And just for those that don't know, you put down as many cards of the red and black as you have models in the crew, put them down blind, and then when you flip them, you assign a model to each card. So if you've got 13 models like a Gremlin crew in you put 13 red cards down, but you wouldn't necessarily know where they are on the table until you flip the card over and see, right, I've got a red card, so I must put a model there.
And that seemed to work. That seemed to work really well. Once people got their heads around blind deployment, there were some interesting different tactics on how they deployed.
Mm.
And some people all crowded around the marker and some people spaced out.
Yeah.
And
it threw an interesting dynamic in because crews that would traditionally sort of castle up or deploy in a break didn't have that option. So it took people out of a comfort zone of that kind of pre-programmed way they're going to run their crew.
Yeah. And it was good. It was good. And again, people are scoring victory points all through this, but what they don't know is that the ultimate conditions for winning the event, actually victory points is sort of like the seventh condition.
Yeah.
So then the third scenario was opening the Ark, and there were two things that I basically just lifted out of the story encounters in the rulebook. One of the things that I wanted to do was not write stuff from scratch.
Mm.
So I was sort of mixing and matching pieces from the story encounter section out of the rulebook, which is something that, I mean, I certainly know that I don't play as much as I probably should, because it does shake up the game quite a lot.
Mm.
So, but that was cool. I might add something to Malibot so that you can do story encounters as well.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the end of turn four, you had to shout out, "The Ark has opened," and then find out what happened.
Horribleness happened.
Yes. Basically, a big gribbly turns up. It's Nakima with fears given form and decaying aura. And then it will just try and kill you.
Mm.
Or
whoever happens to be in the vicinity.
Yes. And what, as I said, the players didn't know that the ultimate victory condition was, did you kill the gribbly?
Yeah.
And of the, I think, 15 sets of players, so 30 players,
yeah,
only 4 players managed to kill the gribbly. So you go through all the conditions, and eventually you ended up with just 4 players.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can backtrack through, did you have all the arc for all 3 games,
yeah,
and stuff. And so I think like the 6th victory condition was how many VPs you scored over the weekend,
yeah,
over the day.
And I don't think you even needed to use that, did you? By then you'd had established who the winner was.
Well, no, it did. It did come down to it. It was Joel Henry, fellow Malifaux, won because he had 13 victory points compared with the last standing guy's 8.
And there was us thinking he was all washed up and couldn't win a game anymore.
Yeah, well, he was using McCabe, so
yeah,
sort of went straight into
the
whole Indy Jones thing.
Yeah.
Other things that we did in the story encounter was the matchup process.
Mm-hmm.
I liked.
Yes.
Because you had attackers and defenders, you had to match them up. So you couldn't have winners playing winners.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were obviously both be attackers.
Yeah.
So we basically just let the losers pick their opponents with the caveat that you've never played them before.
Yeah. And I think also for a weekend event like that, where you want to get potentially lots of different people who have never met before to play each other, I thought that works, yeah, really well in mixing up. So, you know, you as much as you like to play your friends, actually it meant you got to play somebody you perhaps hadn't even met before, or certainly had never played before.
Yeah. And so that worked well, and Joel ended up as the champion.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a bit of a break, not that long actually, only an hour or so, and then kicked off the singles.
Yeah, round one of the singles.
So the singles ran 5 rounds, and we were trying the experiment of VP totals instead of VP diff being the first tiebreaker.
Mm.
Which I'm going to go into more on Malifaux's.
Yeah.
The reasons behind that, and which apparently I'm recording this week as well.
Oh, so a weekly Malifaux's? Surely not.
I know.
You're going to have to do away with the hashtag blame Conrad.
Well, no, I can still blame him.
Well,
I'm sure I can blame him for something.
Everything.
And that ran over onto Saturday as well. So we did 1 round on Friday night and 4 rounds on Saturday.
Yeah.
And
that's
ended up with a worthy winner, I think.
Yeah, and that was probably the most traditional of the 3 events over the weekend, in that kind of Swiss tournament style, based upon who's won and VPs and stuff like that. Yep. And that was your 1 ranked event of the 3.
It was the one ranked event. Ant Holt won.
Yes.
By winning all 5 games.
Was he the only one to win all 5?
He was the only player to win all 5 games.
Yeah. So thoroughly deserved.
Yeah. Joel Henry was 2nd. And Rob Smith was 3rd with Gremlins.
Filthy Wong. What a horrible northern man he is.
Yes. Yes, he did do horrible things to people with Wong all weekend, actually.
Yes.
So that was good. And then Saturday evening was hardcore.
Yes, my first experience of hardcore. Well, hardcore Malifaux, at least.
And so hardcore, if you don't know, is henchman-led crew, 20 soulstones, exactly 4 models, including the henchmen. The strategy is always turf war, and the scheme is always assassinate.
Yeah.
Close deployment, and it's basically just full on quick flips type Malifaux.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, there goes my timer. I'm just going to let it. I'm just going to carry on talking.
Yeah, I think 15 minutes was always going to be optimistic.
I'm going to ignore it. It's going to get a long episode.
Yeah.
So we did the map. So we didn't have to calculate results during the game.
Mm-hmm.
We did the matchups using cards. Everyone will get assigned a fake card, and you just went and found your pair.
Yeah.
We started off with 2 minutes between rounds, but as people were strolling about as to find their tables, that soon got reduced to 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And for me, it was brilliant because I just spent most of my time shouting out, 5 minutes, 30 seconds, move, move.
Yes, it was frenetic, fast, and fun, to use all the Fs. It was unlike anything I'd ever played in any kind of war games event. It was manic. It was just as funny as another F.
It was a complete throwaway event, but I would definitely do it again. I think I would make a couple of tweaks.
Yeah.
Not to the crew selections, but to, I think I would change the strategies.
Yeah.
Or I would keep the strategy. I would change the scheme.
Yeah.
To sort of discourage the crews where you can't kill the henchmen.
Yeah.
But, you know, bad juju type things.
Yeah.
But I would, it definitely worked very well. And then yesterday, as we record, because we're recording on Monday.
Yep.
Random doubles.
Yes. And my personal, I played all the way through the random doubles, so I'm slightly biased, but I did play a little bit of singles and a little bit of the story encounter. For me, the random doubles was the most enjoyable event of the weekend because it was random doubles. You know, we were randomly assigned partners and played out and had funny team names and 25 stones per person. But the UK version of doubles of a single pool of soul stones and a single control hand, single deck between the two partnered players.
Yeah, so it was 50 soul stones in total, but each player had 25 to spend.
Yeah,
you weren't allowed to buy extra soul stones. So crews like the Vix were hampered, but then were getting extra models for free.
Yeah. Yeah, so
sort of balance.
She just had the combined cash of the two leader, the two leaders, yes. Of each of the 25 stones.
Yeah, up to a maximum of 7.
Yeah.
And partners, we used the fate deck mechanism again to assign partners.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I'm definitely going to use in other events because that just seemed a fun thing to do with the way to work it within the game.
Yeah, and the nice thing is because it was you were required to declare your master before being assigned a partner, it prevented, not that, you know, that by nature we are cheesemongers, but it prevented any real power combos being used once you knew who your partner was.
Yeah, so who was your partner?
I think I probably had the luckiest draw of anyone to be able to draw someone of equal skills and ineptitude and incontinence. I got to play with Conrad. And it was lovely. He became kind of not so much as an adoptive father as an adoptive special uncle who pays late night visits to your bedroom. He was a special and caring man.
And you were Vix and Justice, weren't you?
So. Yes, we were just Vix and Justice. So we were assigned a team name by you of sharp, pointy sticks. That is sticks because of our melee orientated crews.
Yeah, and weren't you taking Killjoy and things as well?
Yeah, Conrad took Killjoy. We pretty much maintained the same crew through up until the last round. We didn't take Killjoy in the last round, but certainly in the first two rounds, we just took a static cruise between the two of us. My Joel Henry-inspired Justice crew, because he tells me what I'm allowed to take and not, which was two All Stringers, two Death Marshals, and Justice, I think that was it for me. Yeah.
Filthy, filthy.
Double all stringers and 25 stone crew. That's not that filthy, is it?
Oh, dear. So, yeah, so random doubles didn't work. Certainly none of the pairings that we kicked out seemed particularly nasty.
No.
Between the masters, which is a testament, I think, to the balance in M2E.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure that there are nasty combos of putting masters together.
Mm.
But one of the interesting things, I think,
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Is every...
But I think the other thing about being random is that it prevents you from working out those combos well in advance.
Yeah, I mean, you have to maximize the sort of the synchronicity of the two masters once you know who they are. So you're working with what you've got. And certainly, you know, when we played Adi and Ole, they had a Hoffman Colette crew. You know, there were some dynamics in there that worked really well for them. But in fairness, no better or worse than anybody else that we played. All the stuff we were trying to do ourselves between, you know, using the all-stringers to give one of the Vicks an extra interact or something like that.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks to everyone who stayed behind and helped break everything down.
Yeah.
We got done really quickly, actually.
Yeah. And the other thing is also to throw the thanks out to everybody who bought the terrain to put on top of the excellent tables that were supplied by bendyboards.co.uk.
Yes, that's bendyboards.co.uk.
Or at bendyboards on Twitter. I think, you know, particularly Dave Brown, I thought, bought quite a few tables worth of terrain down.
Yeah.
You know, a few others bought terrain as well.
Yeah, including yourself.
Yes, I did. But to look at the cross and... With no disrespect, overtly, to the War Machine players, to look from one half of the room where we have these exquisite Malifaux tables to their half where they've got a rock and a tree, to me, it really kind of sanctified the fact that I'm on the right side of that particular combination from a gaming aesthetic point of view.
Yeah, we did get a lot of compliments, actually, on the tables. And
yeah, and certainly we had the Dreamer bedroom board sort of just inside the door as a pickup game and demo table, and the number of people that came through and were intrigued and amused by the fact that we would play a game on that style of table. That was really nice to hear from, you know, people who were not necessarily familiar with Malifaux.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we just need to work on on breaking the monotony of Wild West tables as well.
Yeah. Well, we've got some plans for that. I think we discussed a few things, about tables on the way home, and certainly
we'll probably record another show talking about that.
Yes, and people need to get their bums to MCC to be able to witness and play on the wonderful tables that we will be able to produce.
So I think we're so far over time.
Yeah.
I think I've been Mike.
And I've been Matt.
See you next time. You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at Fools_Daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.